Hi there, good evening. Welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Online, you'll find us at jimbohannonshow.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at Jimbo Talks. And thank you very much for being a part of our Labor Day evening. More about the holiday itself a little bit later in the program, but right now I'm going to be talking about something that we thought should be brought to your attention by one of our favorite repeat guests. He is Dr. John Lott. He is president at the Crime Prevention Research Center, or CPRC, an economist and author. And there are some new statistics about gun violence out there. John, good evening. Happy Labor Day.
Happy Labor Day to you. Great to talk to you again.
Absolutely. Now, of course, anytime we hear something about gun violence statistics, we are led to believe, well, I guess the United States must be high on the list. That's what we keep hearing about over and over and over again. But as it turns out, not necessarily.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess people who kind of can look up UN statistics have known that we're well below the average and the median in terms of homicide rates. But one thing that's driven a lot of the gun control debate over recent years has been the perception, as you say, that they think that the United States is an outlier in terms of mass public shootings, that we're somehow unique. It's something that we heard President Obama mention time after time, that there's, you know, we just don't see these types of shootings occurring anyplace else in the world other than the United States. And it turns out, though, that the study that he cited and got a massive amount of attention on this has some problems with it. The person who did it, Adam Langford, would never release his list of cases. He claimed that over almost 50 years, 47 years from 1966 through 2012, there were 90 mass public shooters in the United States and 202 across all the rest of the world. And he wouldn't release his list of cases. He wouldn't tell people exactly how he had gotten the cases that were there. And yet the media, I guess in part because it just fit their template, gave hundreds of news stories in the United States. And I think it's probably got more news coverage than any other academic study this century if you look around the world. So I guess I finally decided, since I couldn't get any information out of him, that I would go and try to put together the list myself. And it was pretty eye-opening. I mean, I was always skeptical of the numbers, because if you have 202 shooters, you know, you're talking about something around 100 or maybe fewer actual shootings that occur over the entire world over the almost 50 years. And that seemed questionable to me. But when I went through it, what I find, I only look at the last 15 years. And the reason is because I don't know, and he's not explaining how you go and find a case where four people are shot to death in Africa, let's say in the 1960s or the 1970s or even the 80s. And it's even hard to get it in the last decade. I can show you cases from countries where you may have a murder rate that's 20 times higher than what we have here in the United States, where 15 people will get killed and you'll have one news story on it. You know, if they were to cover all the murders that were occurring in some of these countries, there wouldn't be any room for anything else in their news. And so I went through and did that, spent about $50,000 on it, actually. And we had to hire people who were experts in different languages and just do a lot of different types of news searches. And we've come up with at least, in the last 15 years, we get at least 3,081 shooters around the world. And that's the most conservative guess. And over that same period of time, there were 45 shooters in the United States. So rather than the United States making up 31% of the mass public shooters in the world, we get it to be about 1.4%. And that's even accepting the fact that I know we're missing lots of cases from around the world.
Now, that's pretty remarkable information. For the record, the United States represents, I guess, approximately 5% of the world's population. So if, in fact, we represented 31% of the shootings, then we would be six times as violent as the world average. If we represent, what was it, 1.4%?
Correct.
In other words, that'd be we would be about four times less violent than the world average.
Right.
That's a huge difference. Are we talking here about an honest misinterpretation of the information, or is somebody cooking the books here?
Well, you know, it's kind of hard to get into people's minds. I suppose somebody could just be extremely sloppy.
That sloppy? That covers a lot of ground for sloppy, John.
I agree. I'm just trying to, who knows, you know.
You're trying to give the person a break. I understand. Okay.
Here's the problem that I have, and that is when the study first was released, it was only released to the media. I get a call, for example, from the Washington Post, and they would ask me to comment, and I said, well, I haven't seen it, and I've asked him for it, but he hasn't given it to me. Could you give it to me? And the reporter at the Post would say she wasn't allowed to give it out because he was only giving it out to media people. And I would say, well, it's a lot easier to comment on a study if I could actually read it and see it rather than just have to take things secondhand. Could you give me the list of cases or whatever? And she said, no, he hasn't provided that. And so my response to the media at the time is, well, you should just be cautious. If the person's not letting researchers look at the study, and if he's not providing a list of cases for people to go and look at, or even explaining completely how he got these cases, I would be skeptical of it.
Let's be perfectly honest here, shall we? It's not just a case of researchers. It's a case of John Lott. You are not exactly unknown on the subject. And if, in fact, the books were somewhat cooked in the direction of trying to undercut gun ownership, you're about the last researcher I'd want poking around.
Okay. Well, you know, the thing is, he doesn't even respond to my emails.
I don't think I would either, assuming that I were, in fact, trying to pull the wool over people's eyes. You're the last person I'd return emails to.
Well, thanks. But I even tried to get some well-known gun control advocates. There's a guy, Mike Wieser, who was a professor at Columbia and before that at Berkeley. Very well-known gun control advocate, to write Lankford, figuring, well, even if he won't respond to me, maybe I can goad Wieser into trying to get the information. And he wouldn't give it out to Wieser, and he was very upset. And in fact, he was so upset that Lankford would not even give the most basic information that he co-authored an op-ed with me that we had in the New York Post on Friday, just saying, you know, there are real problems with this. And
have you two ever co-authored an op-ed?
No, not even
I dare say not. He's on exactly the opposite side of the gun control debate, right?
Right. No, I mean, he has very strong views on this. And but, you know, Lankford's response to him was he would essentially leave it as an exercise to Wieser to go and redo his research without telling him exactly how he had done it. And that's not the type of thing you go and tell somebody. I mean, I'm not surprised that Mike got upset, but it's just, that's just an example. And the fact that he wouldn't release things, it gives, to my mind, kind of a guilty conscience, or a guilty mind type thing. If you hide the stuff from researchers, it just makes it, you know, like it doesn't pass the smell test and kind of makes it look like he doesn't want anybody, even people who are sympathetic to him in terms of his conclusions, to look at it. And that's very troubling.
Yeah. Given the shaky underpinnings of this, something that would cause two noted individuals on exactly opposite sides of the gun debate to co-author an op-ed, how did it become such accepted gospel by the media? I mean, assuming that the people in the media are even remotely doing their job. I understand. I've seen bias in the media, but I mean, I would think this would be the kind of study where you would simply say, well, you know, we're not going anywhere near that one until we know something about it.
Right. Well, I think it just fit their template. I think it just, you know, the thing that's concerned me, as I said, you have hundreds of news stories that were written on this when it was released in 2015, just in the United States. And I've tried to write in the last week or two, tried to write a number of the reporters who had written those stories, just saying, here's our report. I thought you'd like to look at it since you've written on this in the past. And none have responded. The only person that responded was Glenn Kessler at the Washington Post, who's a fact checker. Another reporter who used to work at the fact checking operation. Right. I'd sent it to her, and I had CC'd him on it because I knew he was the head of the group there. And but she had left. He's the only one that responded, and my understanding, he's going to write a story that's coming out this next week on it. But but nobody else in the media, you think at least, given how widely accepted this is, you'd think somebody would be interested in kind of the mainstream media in looking at it.
One would certainly think so. We'll take a call from Doc in Wilmington, Delaware on the Jim Bohannon Show with Dr. John Lott. Good evening, Doc.
Good evening, Mr. Bohannon. As always, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And Mr. Lott, thanks for appearing on Mr. Bohannon's show. First a statement, and then a couple, then a quick, long-winded question. A couple of years ago, we had a shooting, a mass shooting at an abortion clinic in Colorado by a man in his 50s with gray in his beard. That was a police mugshot of him. Brooke Walwood of CNN initially said it was done by a returning Iraqi or Afghan vet. Then she retracted the story later, much later during the day when the CNN was covering the story. Dr. Lott, to what do you attribute the bias in the media against yourself and those of us who own guns and semi-automatic weapons and the NRA and everything else and the gun movement? To what do you attribute that bias, both in academia and the media itself at all? Just ambulism.
Okay. I suppose preconceptions. I mean, to the extent that people are young, they've probably been taught that guns bad, gun owners bad. I mean, that sounds pretty simplistic, John, but my guess would be that's the basis for a lot of this bias, is what they heard in school.
Right. Well, I mean, I guess also the question of who becomes reporters, what have you. He had basically a couple points there.
Yeah.
Just on the first point.
Sure.
The media often gets things wrong on these stories in the initial news reports. You know, they want to go and they want to know things like what gun was used or where did he get the gun. You know, where somebody got the gun is not something that's really easily known instantly. And the media wants to have something out there. They think that that's an important fact to have. And I can't tell you the number of times that they get that wrong. I mean, the easy things that I wish that they would report would be things like, did this shooting occur in a place where victims weren't able to go and protect themselves? Because I think that's an important factor. And yet you virtually never see the media doing, even though that's like the easiest thing for them to go and quickly check on these things. And my guess is the whole gun debate we have right now would be very different if that type of fact would be there. When I've talked to editors and others, they say, well, you know, that would be political for us to put it in there. And I say, well, I don't know why it's any more or less political than any other facts that are there. I think it's an important thing in explaining this. And, you know, but anyway, but, you know, as far as the bias goes, generally, I mean, I think you're right. I think, look, the type of people who are reporters are not the type of people that have had experience with guns. I mean, when I talk to reporters, I can't tell you just simple things about guns. You know, confusing differences between machine guns and semi-automatic.
What's an automatic? What's a semi-automatic?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, you can just tell after talking to them for 2 or 3 minutes that they've never held a gun.
Yeah.
They don't know anything about the differences between them. And that at least tells you something about their upbringing and maybe the type of culture that they were in.
I would dare say. We must pause. We'll come back with the rest of your response to Doc in Wilmington in a moment. Hannon Show, 1-866-50-JIMBO. John Lott from the Crime Prevention Research Center is our guest this evening. CrimeResearch.org is their website. And we have a call from Archie in Emerson, Indiana, joining us this evening. Hello, Archie. Welcome.
Hello, Jimbo. Hope you and Mr. Lott had a pleasant Labor Day.
Yes, indeed.
Well, thank you.
I have been lied to for so long by the people trying to use their false statistics for whatever ends thereafter that I've decided it's time to start fighting fire with fire. And while, as you pointed out, I am in the Emerson, Indiana area, I really call my home out west. I'm in Indiana due to my son having had a heart attack, and I've tried to stay out here close to him for the last year and a half. So I'll get back west as soon as I can.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Do you think of Indiana as somehow anti-gun territory, except maybe for the area around Gary? I had never thought of it that way.
It is the east, and it's where I went to high school and where I grew up as a young man. But I sure do miss those big, wide-open skies.
Okay. Well, we're glad that you do, and we certainly wish the best for your son. But as regards the gun debate, what exactly did you have to offer us?
Well, the town I come from out west, the city I come from, is about 500,000. It's not the state capital.
Okay.
If you add in the suburbs, it might come to 600,000.
Okay.
From the year 2000 to the first 10 years of the new century, mm-hmm. we averaged maybe 10 fatalities a year, maybe 15.
I assume by fatalities you mean by gunshot wound, right?
By gunshot, yeah.
Okay.
I believe that included law enforcement shootings.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right.
It was a fairly consistent number.
Right.
We had a couple of really bad cases involving a whole household of people being wiped out.
Okay. I'm trying to get us something that our guests can respond to here, Archie.
Well, I'm getting
right.
to it.
Okay.
So in 2013, they passed a law saying no more concealed carry permits, no more permits of any kind. Carry whatever you want. Carry it concealed. Carry it open, whatever you like.
In other words, when you said no more permits, you meant no more permits are needed. In other words,
right.
there are no restrictions on carrying. Is that what you're saying?
Of course. Correct.
Gotcha.
And since then, those mass death incidents have ceased. And
in other words, you're saying since that time, the rate of violent deaths by gunshot has dropped.
In the streets and people be shooting each other.
Okay.
Do you know what state he was saying he was from?
He just said out west. Archie, before the break hits us here, what particular state out west?
Wyoming.
Wyoming. Okay, very good.
And by the way, the city I'm from?
Yeah.
Those are the numbers for the entire state.
Yeah, they certainly are. I was going to say there's no city in Wyoming that has 600,000 metro population. That's the population of the state. Okay, so he's talking about Wyoming. Now, we're coming up on that break. We will get a response from John Lott when we come back on the Jim Bohannon Show in just a moment. Back to Jim Bohannon Show at 1-866-50-JIMBO. John Lott from the Center, the Crime Prevention Research Center, which is online at crimeresearch.org, has been talking about a paper on mass public shootings that has received massive national and international media attention. And this particular study finds that, in fact, not 31%. Of the world's mass public shootings occurred in the U.S., but 1.4%. And some of this has been swallowed hook, line, and sinker by the major media. Now, Archie in Emerson, Indiana, called in. He used to live in Wyoming. We got that from him. And he says that although they had a rather minuscule rate of deaths from gunshots in Wyoming, and I'm only quoting what Archie said, that once they eliminated all restrictions on the carrying of weapons, that even that small rate went down. John Lott, your comments.
Well, I guess a few comments. One is Indiana is a pretty gun-friendly state.
Yeah, that was my thinking.
We just put out our most recent annual report on concealed carry across the United States, and you have 18% of the adult population in Indiana that has a concealed carry permit. So there's only one state that's above that, and that's Alabama. So that's, you know, nationally, if you take out kind of California and New York, which are very different from everybody else, you end up with about 8.6%. So it just gives you an idea how incredibly gun-friendly Indiana is. And their concealed carry law pretty much lets you carry the gun any place that isn't forbidden under federal law. Now, with regard to constitutional carry, there are 14 states that have the types of rules that Wyoming has in either all or virtually all of their state, where you don't need a permit to carry within the state. They still issue permits in Wyoming. You get a permit if you want to go and carry in other states. They're what are called reciprocity agreements, where just like other states will honor your driver's license, there are certain states that have made an agreement with Wyoming to go and honor their concealed carry permits. And so if you want to carry outside of Wyoming, you have to go and get those permits. I don't see the big change in murder rates that he claims occurs for Wyoming after. I mean, there may be a tiny change, but it's not the type of going from, you know, the number that he was talking about down to zero.
Fair.
And it's pretty much, actually, it's maybe very slight change, but it's you know, the thing is, people haven't been able to, these constitutional carry laws haven't really been around long enough in enough different states to be able to go and do much statistical evidence. Most of the states that have adopted those have just done so in the last 3 or 4 years. And, you know, we're only getting data for a couple years after some of those states have adopted it to really go and look at these things very carefully.
All right, 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626, as we go to Tom, who calls in from Port Angeles, Washington. Hello, Tom.
Hello, John. Hello, Mr. Lott. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Doing great.
See, thanks for putting out per capita numbers. I think if more people just looked at the per capita numbers as it relates to demographics, things would be a lot more understandable over a broad variety of modern-day issues, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
But my question for you, Mr. Lott, is when we were going through the bump stock phase, right, I realized with, you know, reference to my dad's combat experience and other things I've learned along the way, even if in the worst firefight you ever got in, nobody shoots like somebody with a bump stock. You'd be out of ammunition, and both your platoons would be out of ammunition in about 15 minutes.
True, and you wouldn't hit anything either.
Yeah.
Okay. Unless you're firing into a mass human wave attack like the Chinese pulled in Korea, or if you're firing into a crowd at a country music concert in Las Vegas.
Right.
Okay, so
anyway, my question is, Mr. Lott, when that episode surfaced, why didn't the NRA, what I would figure to be the right thing is just say, go ahead and get rid of bump stocks altogether, just get rid of it, because it's no good for anybody, and I thought about that would have been a time to throw some oil on the water and smooth things out a little bit.
Interesting thought.
Where are we at?
We'll get our guest response. I know I've had people call in about this, John.
Sure.
And I've challenged them. I said, you know, okay, target shooting, no good. Hunting, no good. I mean, what exactly good are these bump stocks? And I never got a decent answer. Maybe you can tell us.
Well, I suppose some people will tell you that it's fun to be able to fire lots of bullets at once, even if they're not aiming at anything in particular. Who knows? I'm not going to debate questions of taste that are there.
Sure.
I mean, I guess there are two points to make here. One is, I have no problem with banning it myself. The only thing I would like people to realize is you're basically talking about two tubes with a spring in it.
Mm-hmm.
And you really don't need a lot of technical skills to be able to go and put something like that together to function. Now, the NRA actually did come out and support banning bump stocks. The problem came into how the language that the Democrats wanted to have actually read. And if you read it, it sounded like they could ban all semi-automatic guns with it. And so the question is, do you just want to ban the bump stocks, or do you want to leave the language sufficiently, you know, pliable that it could be banning all sorts of things that you may not realize you're banning when you go and vote on it, or at least not everybody does.
Mm.
So that was, so who knows? But right. I'm just saying the, at least officially, they came out and banned it, but I'm not their spokesperson.
Well, fair enough. All right. 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. And we go to Mike in Western Maryland. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Jimbo. Hey, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Sure.
The shooter at the video game conference in Florida about 10 days ago was from Maryland. And in 2013, Maryland implemented a ridiculous handgun qualification license scheme. And this kid actually had his handgun qualification license. And somehow he was able to purchase handguns, but yet he had mental health problems and had been treated in the mental health system. Now, I'd like to ask Dr. Lott, if mental health problems are reported to the NICS system, and if not, does he see a time when it's going to happen?
Okay, and the name of that system again?
I think it's like the National Instant Criminal Check System or something.
Okay, for those of us who aren't into the acronyms, we just wanted to know. Okay, go ahead, John.
Right. Well, I mean, the thing is, there's mental illness and then there's mental illness. So if somebody's been involuntarily committed to some type of mental health care facility, then their name will go into the system and they'll be banned from having owning guns. So the issue is really the severity of the mental illness. I mean, you have, depending on how you wanted to go and define mental illness, I mean, you're going to have tens of millions of people that you could put into the list there. You had this instance under the Obama administration where they wanted to go and disqualify about 4.5 million people on Social Security, claiming that they were mentally ill because they needed help with their finances. So you have two things. One is, right now, if you're involuntarily committed, your name is in the system. Or if you've been adjudicated by a judge in some way as having mental health problems. And if you're a mental health care expert and you believe the person has a problem, it's your duty to go and inform the court system that you think the person is a danger to others. The problem comes into the mental health care experts themselves realize that they have an incredibly difficult job going identifying these individuals. This is not unusual to have somebody actually seeing mental health care experts before they go and do these attacks. About 60% of the mass public shooters over the last 20 years were seeing mental health care experts, either psychiatrists or psychologists, before they did the attacks. Some of them were seeing some of the top experts in the world even before they did the attacks, like the Santa Barbara killer. Was seeing the head of Children's Hospital in Los Angeles, who's an internationally recognized expert on these very topics.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they can't identify these individuals beforehand. So, you have a situation where you just take schizophrenia.
Yeah. Okay, well, we've got to pause. We'll come back and we'll take schizophrenia for 300, Alex, in a moment.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Jim Bohannon Show. Our guest is Dr. John Lott from the Crime Prevention Research Center, and we're talking about a study that, shall we say, rather skews the truth about gun violence in this country. As we get back to some calls here, you were about to examine mental illness in general and schizophrenia in particular, John.
Right. Well, I guess to kind of cut away from the academic long discussion there, the problem is it's very hard to identify individuals beforehand whether or not they're a danger to others in terms of these mass public shootings. It's often easy afterwards to see the signs or interpret them in different ways, to play Monday morning quarterbacking on this. There's a whole academic literature where psychiatrists and psychologists talk about how hard it is, how wrong they often are in identifying individuals as being dangerous and how many times they miss it. So you take something like schizophrenia. There are like 2.5 million people with schizophrenia in the country. You may, over the last 20 years, have a few mass shooters that have some form of schizophrenia. You know, in order to try to pick out those few people from over all those years from 2.5 million people having that, you know, it's such a rare problem that it's very hard for them to do it.
Yeah. To a call from Gary in St. Cloud, Minnesota on the Bohannon Show. Good evening, Gary.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. The question for John is, or my topic, I should say, statistics show that something like 8 out of 10 of the countries in the world with the highest murder rate, you know, firearm used murder rate in the world are in our southern hemisphere. So they're countries that the immigrants are crossing the border illegally from on our southern border. And I guess my comment or my question to Mr. Lott is, you know, the illegal immigrants are skewing violent crime rates and statistics in this country so dramatically and have been for years now. How do we not, I'd like to get your opinion on this, but it seems to me that we need to closely connect immigration reform and especially just enforcement at the border with as a sort of a fundamental issue to gun rights.
Because all right, let's let our guest respond to you, Gary. I am all in favor of enforcing our immigration laws. I don't know, John, the extent to which our violent crime numbers are skewed by people in this country illegally. You tell me.
Right. Well, just the first part of his statement about looking at firearm homicide rate numbers. The problem is half the countries in the world don't report firearm homicides. I mean, we're so spoiled by data in the United States where we have breakdowns, you know, not only homicides, firearm homicides, cases where four people were killed, you know, whether it was a public attack or not. You know, most countries don't have that. So, you know, a lot of the countries, even in Central America and what have you, don't have that type of breakdown. So it's a little hard.
Right.
Just to kind of, just as a warning for his initial statement. Now, on the second part, we did some research that came out earlier this year. I'd been working with the state of Arizona Corrections Department, and had gotten access to 30 years of everybody who is in their prison system. And in the pre-sentencing report that was done, they identified whether or not the individuals were in the country illegally or not. And it turns out that the violent crime rate for the illegals was about 245% higher than it is for Native Americans.
Wow.
That you have, and it's particularly bad among the worst crimes. You know, you're talking about rape and murder, child molestation, pretty vicious crimes. They're really overrepresented. And legal immigrants actually are relatively don't commit much crime. They're actually more law-abiding than the native population, but the illegals are much higher. And often what happens in most of the discussions is they mix together the legal and illegal immigrants to just talk about immigrants as a whole. And from the breakdown that I've seen, that's a very misleading thing to do because the two groups, the type of people who go
right.
through the rules apparently to come here are quite different than the ones who come here illegally.
I dare say. Imagine that, misleading statistics. Back in a moment. Jimbo, John Lott from crimeresearch.org. And Lance, he is in Galloway Township, New Jersey this evening to join in our conversation. Hello, Lance. Welcome.
Hey, good evening, Jimbo. Good evening, Mr. Lott. Just a quick question. Does anybody have any statistics in regards to the hardened criminals and gang members? Do they actually go in and register their guns? And the second follow-up is the situation in Chicago that's been going on for the last, I would say, year and a half, 2 years. Has anyone actually come up with any sort of plan to actually go in there with, it's like urban warfare in certain, you know, sections or wards of the city? And apparently no one, I mean, it was just in somebody walking on the bridge trying to stop the traffic to the airport to bring attention to it. And, I mean, this thing has been going on for almost 2 years.
It has indeed. And with the time that we have left, let's let our guest respond to you in that regard. All right.
Let me take the more serious question first, the second one.
Sure.
I think it's a pretty simple point. They only arrest about 17% of the people who commit murder in Chicago. And that's when Rahm Emanuel became mayor, it was 30%, which is already abysmally low. I mean, just to give you an idea, nationally, it's 64%. Where Mayor Daley became mayor, it was about 2/3. It fell dramatically down to 30%. It's continued falling. And they essentially let politics get in the way too often with how they run their police department. So Manuel, for example, he closed down the detective bureaus in the high crime rates parts of the city. Detectives still have to solve the crimes, but now they have to drive 40 minutes or whatever to get to the crime scene. In the last year and a half, they require that the police, every time they talk to somebody, have to fill out 2 long legal pages of information. So it takes about 45 minutes to an hour for them to fill that out. So if you go, you're a police officer, and you talk to 4 people in the morning, you're spending 4 hours in the rest of the day going and filling out the paperwork. I mean, we're not talking about talking to people about crimes. We're just saying anybody you talk to, you have to go and fill out this huge paperwork.
And I gather that's butt cover paperwork, right, to prove that we weren't...
Well, it's stuff that the ACLU wanted them to
do. I'm sure the ACLU did, because the ACLU doesn't have to live in urban Chicago. Yes, but go ahead.
Right, and so, you know, if you're only getting 17% arrested, and it's even lower for the gang murders that are there, what's the risk for a lot of these criminals? And the thing is, since the people in the city know that the criminals are very unlikely to end up in jail, people are reticent to come forward to testify against them. And so you just have this vicious cycle that's there. They're going to have to get rid of a lot of the political correctness that they have in terms of running the police department there if they're going to solve the problem. And they like to blame it on everything else other than the politicians. If you're only arresting 17%, it's a real problem.
It is a problem without question, and time has elapsed. Please stay online. We'll speak off air. Again, Dr. John Lott from the Crime Prevention Research Center, their website, crimeresearch.org. I'm Jim Bohannon, and this is Westwood One.
On triple-digit days, our hearts go out to those right here in our community who can't afford the luxury.